Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in studio, as always, Chris Rankin, helping me bring you football talk just the way you like it here on the National Gridiron Network. We do not have our boy Weez Weez in the studio today, so there will be no "yeah boy" over the mic, unfortunately. I know, it's a hard place to be for everybody, but at least he's doing something football related. He is actually hanging out with his wife, allegedly watching the Chicago Bears at their camp. I mean, you know, like every good Vikings fan would. I'm
scouting report.
There you go. Apparently, Weasel has a side gig with a scouting report doing all that stuff here. I'm actually texting the number for the call in to Mr. Twan Staley, the NGN's and an AFC East writer. Who'll be with us in here shortly. You know, but I saw something really quick. You know, I saw that Drew Brees says that he feels good enough to where he would be able to play until he's 45. I mean, that's great. First of all, I don't know that the Saints will have an O-line that's that good now, let alone for the, you know, however many more years until he gets to 45. But he also cited on Twitter that he's since had two requests for a random drug test for PEDs. So, I mean, I guess that makes sense, right? I don't know. They're paying attention, at least now. Of course, you know, they weren't paying attention when Richard Sherman and Brandon Browder were trying to pay more attention with Adderall suspend. Whoa! Too soon? No,
not at all.
I'm sorry. It's just funny because Adderall and pay attention, I don't, whatever. I make jokes. That's what I do. I don't know, Chris, but you know, we were talking here before the show that the Giants have a goal for Eli Manning to get 70% accuracy on his passes. That's a lot. I don't know that that counts as a reasonable goal. What is that a reasonable goal? Does that make sense for Eli?
Is it a reasonable goal or is it reasonable for Eli? Which one?
Oh.
Are you counting interceptions?
I suppose that's a question. That's a question we have to ask when it comes to Eli. Somebody caught the ball, right? I mean, that's a completion, right? Right, fellas?
Yeah, right? It is a completion.
That's 25 more completions, too, if you look at it that way.
I mean, last year he was he averaged 57.5%. percent completions. His career is 58.5.
Make sure you get that half in there, son.
Yes, hell exactly. Yes.
That's where it's.
We can always do round down 57 and 58. So that career is 58.
You know, and I mean, that's
so
not
I mean, great, he's been hovering around the 60% range. 70 realistic? No.
Yeah.
65. You know.
You know, 65 would be is tall anyway. I mean, in general. To be considered a good quarterback, 60% is the general region we're hoping for. I mean, I never really expected much more from quarterbacks. You know, I don't know. But I think you said it best. That's a hell of a jump. I mean, if Eli comes out throwing 70%, the Giants would probably win the division. Quite easily. I just don't think that's plausible or possible. Okay, fine. They got Ruben Reynolds. They got Cruz. That's all super.
Okay. Well, I mean, usually you say, yeah, you can accomplish it if you can. You want to check down to your tight ends. But right now, the Giants are having issues with tight ends.
Oh.
So
if he plays like Russell Wilson, he'll be just fine. Boom. Right.
But, I mean, look at 70%. Peyton Manning last year was 71%.
Yeah,
completion, and his career is 65.5.
So
for his career.
So you know, considering Chris Knee is a lineman for the Giants, and actually he's retiring. So
he's retired. Yes,
former lineman at this point for the Giants, and also Coughlin's son-in-law. He's familiar with leveraging family to coach. I would assume so. He'd be like, look, Eli. Okay, your brother can throw 70%. Why can't you? You have more rings. You can do that mess.
Yeah, you know that's Eli's comment every time when Peyton tries to give him points, like, who has the two Super Bowl rings?
Yeah,
right. Shut up.
Hey, little brother, I noticed you threw a lot of interceptions there. I'm sorry. He'll awkwardly hold up his hand for no reason just to, I'm sorry, I can't hear you over the sound of these rings clanging together on my hand.
He's like, if every game was a Super Bowl, I wouldn't be throwing any.
Yeah. I like that. If every game was a Super Bowl, I wouldn't be throwing any. Well, unfortunately, that was only two of them. Sorry. Oh, you want to know what else is two, Peyton? The rings on my hand. Anyway. Oh, it's silly, like it always is on here. But it's about to get a lot more smart. On the line here, with us, to bring an element of intelligent, well, more than an element, it just got an awful lot of intelligence. I mean, once again, I have to hold back my urge to make fun of the fact that he is a baseball fan slash writer, but he's still a great football mind, and that, at the end of the day, is what's important here on The Student of the Game, that you are indeed a great football mind, first and foremost. But let me go ahead and bring him in, the man himself, the AFC wide writer for the National Gridiron Network, among several other places where he writes and spews sports knowledge like it's gospel, Mr. Antoine Staley. Antoine Staley, what's good, my man?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, man.
What's up? How you doing?
Hey, I'm always excited to have you, Mom. It's always a good time because I act so silly and you don't, so it plays really well when I listen to it. I'm just...
So... Well, I thought you wanted me to talk about the trading deadline coming up in baseball. You know.
Oh, bringing that in this talking about.
Hey, the only good thing about the trade deadline in baseball is that means the season's getting closer to being over.
Oh, well, see, I didn't say that, Twan Staley. That was Rankin. That was all Chris.
Well, the Red Sox season is just about over anyway, so hey, you know, so I'll be looking forward to football very soon.
Doesn't it have to get started before it can be over?
Wow. Wow. I love it, man. So let me ask you this, Twan Staley. Drew Brees is talking about that. He thinks he could play till he's age 45. Will you be going to baseball games till you're age 45?
No, that's not football. I mean, Brett Favre, we know, we saw how demanding Brett Favre. I mean, Brett Favre is like a warrior out there almost.
Oh, yeah.
We saw him break down at age 41, so I can't really see any. See, Tom Brady thinks the same thing. Tom Brady thinks he can play another 10 years as well, but that's just not going to happen. At some point, your body's going to stop responding. It's not going to do the same things that you wanted to do. I think their minds feel like they're getting smarter as they get older. But as we all know, just because you get smarter, but then your body doesn't do what it wants to do like it did like at age 25. It doesn't respond the same way. So I think they're going to start to find that out as they get older.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. Like with Peyton Manning, there's that one bootleg from last year on the goal line where he fooled everyone, even the cameraman, and he runs out to the left to score the touchdown. Look, we all know it was an amazing play. But one thing that no one's willing to admit because it was a good play is how long it actually took him to cross the goal line when he was running. It was not rough. People thought it was in slow motion when it wasn't. It was dangerous. I don't know. It wasn't a good time.
But then again, about Peyton, he's always been slow. So you don't have to worry about him getting in much slower because he's always been slow. He was in college. He was not very fast. So
I have seen him dodge the question regarding his 40 time when he was drafted. That's true. That's a good point. That's a good point.
I don't even think he's been tested on the 40.
It would be – well, see, back then they made him run it. They just may have hit it. You know the pull the SEC has and things. Anyways, enough of this silliness. We have fun with it. So just wanted to get the word out there that tomorrow, I believe, you will actually be in attendance in Miami Dolphins training camp. So please check out Twan Staley any way you can, whether he's writing for us here or – at any one of your the other outlets, his own website, for example, just follow him really quick. Just, you got to do it. It's a good time. But the question I had for you is, you were at minicamp as well, and now you're going to training camp.
Yes.
In your mind, as somebody who follows the Dolphins closely, we have A, we have C, going from minicamp to training camp. What is part B? What is it that you're looking to see change or improve between these two things? What is it that you want to see happen? Like, okay, I was at minicamp. I observed this team, their rookies, and them working out. This was missing. I want to see it here in training camp if they hope to evolve.
Well, you want to see people, how they play with pads, the players. It's all good. You know, you got players running around with shorts and, you know, jerseys on, but no pads on, and, you know, people, as we know, the game is much different when you put the pads on. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the first and foremost, the most obvious thing, I think, when you're talking about after a training camp. And sometimes they may practice without pads. Sometimes they, I know the Dolphins, I wasn't there because I was out of town on Sunday, but I know they practice with pads on Sunday. So I don't know if they're going to practice. Today was an off day. They're probably going to, I would have to, if I guess they'll probably be in pads tomorrow. So, but we'll have to wait and see what Philbin and his crew decide to do. But, yeah, that's what you want to see, just how the players respond to pads. Because it's all good, you know, you run around there with T-shirts and, you know, shorts or, you know, with the jerseys on or whatnot. But how they play in pads and, you know, it's kind of how it's going to be, you know, come game time. So that's the first and foremost of what I like to see. And two, you know, Jarvis Landry had an outstanding LTAs and minicamp. You know, you want to see if that carries over as well. And, you know, how the offense for the Dolphins runs. So, you know, that was the big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, what you got?
You're talking about speaking with the offense right there. The effect of Mike Pouncey's injury and Tannehill getting sacked league high 58 times last year and getting hit 100 times. This new revamped offensive line, what do you see as like a, you know, like a strength for them? And then also with the running game, was ranked 26 last year, only scored 8 rushing touchdowns.
Well, you're going to have 5 new offensive linemen starting because of Pouncey's injury. And what we also found out last week that it's much worse than what we thought. It could miss the first half of the season. So, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing, especially when he's your best lineman and your pro bowler.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in your center for that most. You know, the center, I think, is one of the most underrated positions in football because, you know, what the coverages are, you know, you have to relay that to the quarterback. You have so much, you have a big responsibility on the offense. You know, I think it's just almost as important as a quarterback, to be honest with you. But having said that, it's going to be tough. Like I say, they brought in O'Shawn Moreno, who, like, he got hurt. That he, like I said, he's on the PUP list. And, you know, it's been reports that he may get cut, you know, because, you know, they only signed him to a 1-year deal, and they really like the progress that Lamar Miller has made in camp, and he's done a good job and still laid the new offensive coordinator system. So we'll have to see how that takes out. You know, if Moreno, a lot of people, like I said, either you think it's a good addition or not. I didn't necessarily, you know, I thought they could have drafted somebody because a lot of people thought Moreno was a product of the Broncos, you know, passing game last year. He got those yards because everybody was focused on the passing game and not necessarily because he was that good, because that was really his breakout year. So I think it's kind of, you know, a lot of people are kind of skeptical, like, how good he really is. So it's going to be interesting to see how that running game translates. I think it can't be much worse than what it was last year. I think the offensive line will play much better. They addressed that in the draft with James and Turner and some of the additions that they made. So I expect to go up.
Okay, you brought up Lamar Miller in camp. You know, he's turning heads. For fantasy purposes, should people play fantasy, should they try to pick him up as a number 2 running back, or you think he's a number 1?
Well, I think he's going to get carries anyway. As far as fantasy, I'll take a low round pick on him maybe. If you absolutely need, just take a flyer on him, just see how he does. I wouldn't touch him in the rounds, honestly. Actually, I thought he'd do a good job, but, you know, he had some problems, you know, holding on to the ball and, you know, being consistent. So, I think he may do a better job in his third year, to be honest with you. But, again, I'm not necessarily sold on that either. So, you're talking about fantasy, it'd be like a low round pick just to have depth at running back, to be honest with you.
Well, hey, I mean, look, I'll go ahead and shout it out for Weasel, who is in here right now, but he would definitely be talking smack about Lamar Miller as a fantasy pick with how it's not done well for him lately. So there is all of that. And let me throw in one thing, too, for those who question O'Shawn Moreno's production. You know, I could see where people would think the pass game would beef up his numbers unless that quarterback is Tebow. Tebow. He was running good with Tim Tebow. I don't want to hear about that. I don't know. Anyways. Yeah, I know Willis McGahee, he was there too. Whatever. Anyways, enough about that. Go ahead, Chris. You had more.
No, right? Also, you did mention the new offense coordinator, Bill Lazor. He was the QB coach for the Eagles last year. And you saw how well Nick Foles did for the Eagles. Can that Tannehill-Wallace chemistry that's unquestioned, can he fix that for the Dolphins this year?
Well, I mean, I was in the OTAs in the minicamp, and I mean, they still had some problems converting the deep ball, but they looked a lot better as far as chemistry wise. It was just to be expected because this is the first full year. The second year they've been together, and it's the first off season they've had a chance to really acclimate to each other and, you know, get used to one another. So I think they're building more and more chemistry. So I think you can only expect it to get better. Now, as far as like the deep ball, I mean, that just might be something that Tannehill may be inconsistent of, but we'll have to wait and see how that translates to, like I say, the camp, the training camp, and then the preseason, and of course the season, the September 7th to get the Patriots.
Yeah, I like where you took that too, because Tannehill is spending less time trying to learn the playbook because, well, you know, he knows it now, and it offers more time. And something else that Chris and I were talking about before the show is that the previous offensive system may have taken too much time to develop the long ball for Wallace, you know, to get open, or for Tannehill to make that play. This new system fixing that, I mean, that can only help, right? I mean, just throwing that out there. See, beef does matter.
Yeah. Well, you're saying, well, it should be better than last year. Well, I don't think it could get worse, because last year on passes over 20 yards, they were they connected 5 for 26 for 212 yards, Wallace and Tannehill, with one touchdown and three interceptions.
Ouch.
I mean, Tannehill's rookie season with Heartline in 2012 was he was 10 for 21 for 341 and no interceptions on deep ball over 20. So with Brian Heartline and Wallace, I think it might be the speed, the developing of the player it plays. So, I mean, what can the Dolphins be excited about with the new offense coordinator?
Well, I think this offense, this is, you know, one, you hit it. I think Kyle said it, that the offense took too long to develop, especially when you have an inept offensive line. I mean, why are you going to hold on to the ball when your offensive line is not that very good? So I think that was a big problem as well. Now, I think this offense, just seeing it, you know, the times that I have in camp, is more, it's faster. It's, they get the ball out a lot quicker. You know, it's more like three-step drops traditionally, what you want to see out of quarterback. It's more like a modernized offense as opposed to with Sherman. It's like five and seven-step drops, and you're like, get rid of the ball, you know. I mean, I know you want Wallace to get downfield, but you have to understand he's very fast, so he can get down the field anyway, like on a three-step drop, you know.
Yeah.
If the pass is going to be there, like he's very fast, so you don't need to take that very long to get the ball out too long. So I think, like I said, that's the one thing I have noticed in camp. It's a lot faster. There's a lot more rhythm to it, and the players seem to enjoy the new offense.
So Bill Lazor is bringing that Chip Kelly fast-paced offense to Miami.
Well,
you're saying.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do. Yeah, it's very similar to that. And then you have Lamar Miller then, you know, catching more balls out the backfield. And, you know, I know they tried to throw it to him last year. He dropped a lot of passes, and, you know, they stopped going to him in that regard. But I think this offense is a lot more, you know, he's been catching the ball. He's been playing a lot better, period, in camp. But, again, whether that translates in the game or not, you know, it remains to be seen.
Sure. Well, even into pads at that moment too. But I can tell you, you know, your report, and you're being a great analyst like you always are, Tuan Staley. But I can tell your fanhood's getting involved a little bit here, because I could just tell the way you worded it. When Chris asked a question about the Chip Kelly offense and then modeling that, that's what they're trying to do. See, that does not inspire a lot of confidence in me if I'm hearing you describe what they're working on.
I'm just trying to, whether that, you know, it's exactly like that, you know, you had the parts and everything together, and you got to have the right, you know, quarterback to run the offense. Like, you know, you have to see it in the game. That's why I say they're trying to do that. You're kind of more skeptical, you know, until you really see it on the field. And once you see it play out on the field, I think people are more, it'll be more, you know, have an understanding and seeing more what they want to do.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. And I mean, you know, if they're using it as a model but not trying to mimic it exactly, like, I don't think they're trying to necessarily get run off 75 plays in a game or something like that, for example.
Yeah, we're getting like the cliff notes. Like, we're getting the cliff notes of what they want to do. We're not necessarily getting the full, you know, book on what they want to do in the season yet until they play it out in the game, and then we'll have more of a understanding.
I like that. The cliff notes. It's Chip Kelly's offense abridged. Yes, absolutely. I like it. I like it a lot. So, hey, you know, I'll tell you what. It sounds like you've been doing your share of studying for your time at camp tomorrow. Definitely stoked for you being there. Tweet some stuff out so I can be, you know, a Twitter stalker and retweet all that, and that'll be a great time. But let me change gears for you a bit, because actually I did have one more question about the Dolphins before we do that, and it's in relation to actually a conversation that me, Chris, and Weasel were having, and that's with Coach Philbin, with Joe Philbin. Chris and Weasel had him among top five coaches that are under pressure to win. Do you feel like that the Dolphins will make a change at the head coaching spot if they don't produce this year?
It depends on really the record. 8-8, they may keep Philbin because they brought in a new general manager. Anything below 8-8, I would see them making a coaching change, because I think they realized how close they got last year, and you know, they had two opportunities to get in and get into the playoffs, and you know, they didn't get the job done, quite honestly. They looked like a team that wasn't motivated to play. I mean, they were like, they against the Patriot game, they were like, they put all their eggs in one basket and wanted to go out and play their hardest. That might have been their best victory of the year. And then the last two games, they looked very flat. They're like a team that just, you know, quite frankly, was just, you know, out of it, you know, at that point. Buffalo, I understand, you know, cold weather, it was snowing, you know, I get it. But even then, like you say, you had two opportunities to make the play. I mean, get in, you know, one. All you needed was one win, and you didn't get anything. And you get a win, period, and all you scored was 7 points in the last two games. So that's right. Really disappointing. And Philbin is supposed to be an offensive, you know, guru. So, I mean, yeah, I would say, yeah, he's definitely under fire.
No. Okay, cool. See, because, yeah, I didn't have him in the top five like Weasel and Chris did, but I definitely had him top 10 of coaches who need to be a little bit worried about things in general there, too. And while you cite that Bills loss, man, I thought the Jets thing was much worse. And of course, you know me, I'm living in the trenches.
Yeah. I actually agree with that.
Well, there you go. And I mean,
it's a home, and then, you know, you're expected to play. I just say I get the Bills loss. But like I say, they're coming off of a very emotional win the week before, and you're going on the road, and it's cold, it's snowing. I mean, nobody wants to be in there in Buffalo. I get it. Like I say, but the Jets loss, I agree, is much worse.
Well, heck, with some of the whispers I've heard about the Bills possibly moving to Toronto, not even the Bills want to be in Buffalo, arguably. But, hey, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, and at the end of the day, like I said, I live in the trenches. Whoever that was that let Geno Atkins just own them like a redheaded stepchild. Oh, no, it wasn't even Atkins. It was the defensive end. I forget his name immediately, who came in and got the safety to decide the Thursday night game that was in overtime. Well, hey, that was playoffs right there. I'm just saying.
Whoever, are you talking about the Cincinnati game?
I sure am.
Oh, you're talking about Cam Wake. That was Cam Wake that got the safety.
There you go. So he did that, and they still couldn't finish the job. There you go. I don't know. It cancels a good play like that, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, Cameron Wake. How do I forget Wake? What's wrong with me? Wake up, Kyle. How about that? Anyways, see what I did.
Yeah, he was named the AFC's best pass rusher. Last week. So yeah, I can't even forget about that.
Yeah. See, look at Twan Staley telling me to wake up now. Look at that. Okay. Great. Go watch a baseball game. Anyway.
I'm actually watching, as I'm speaking to you right now, I'm actually watching the Red Sox game. So.
Oh, my goodness. You weren't supposed to actually have an answer when I said that, dude. Come on. That was awesome.
Jose Bautista just got a hit.
There you go. Okay, we're going to move off of that to coming back to the other team you seem to cover that I've seen you have writings for on Cover 32. And it was recently announced that Kyle Rudolph had an extension to his contract in Minnesota. First things first, man, as a guy who writes about the Vikings on a quest on occasion, is this a good move for them?
Yeah, because I think his production is down because of that quarterback situation. I think now, like, they like Castle, evidently. So apparently they're going to go roll out with him at least for the first preseason game. Heard Bridgewater's doing a good job there. You know, if you can get somebody consistently from the quarterback position, I think you'll see his numbers go up. And I also think Cordell Patterson, I think, is forced to have a big year. So I think their offense is going to be much better. And of course, you have Adrian Peterson back there, so that doesn't hurt at all. Excuse me. So I think that's really going to help their offense. I think they're going to be a much better team offensively this upcoming year. It's just a matter of the defense and the secondary was really, you know, terrible a year ago, to be honest with you. But, you know, they made some changes. They signed Captain Muddlin. They think that's going to be an improvement there.
Yes.
So we'll have to wait and see how much they improve there. And I like the Anthony Barr. I like that draft pick as well. I think he could turn out to be one of the underrated draft picks this upcoming year as well. He could be a rookie of the year candidate.
Let's see. Look at that. Where is Weasel? Twan Staley dropping that Vikings knowledge, man. Wow. I'm expecting my switchboard to come up with Nick Ficarelli here any minute because we just talked the Vikings. That would be hilarious. I'm just saying.
Well, I can talk about it too. Like, we can break it down, man. I can talk about Jacksonville if you want me to, man. We can talk about that too.
Ooh, look at this guy. Hey, I can do that too. I just can't get into the draft picks like you do, man. I've said it up front even when I've had you on the show. I don't do the draft very well, but that's why I have cats like you, Teron, Brandon Howard, all that to do it for me. Help me out, man. Student of the game.
Well, I watch a lot of college football, so that's why. Like, I watch a lot of college football. I spend more time while I watch the college football than I probably do the NFL, to be honest with you. Even though I watch both. Both of my Saturdays and Sundays are very busy during the fall. You know, I have no life, honestly, because I'm watching football, but I watch more college football games than I do NFL, so I see a lot more of the picks. So that's probably why I have so much knowledge about it.
See, you say you have no life. Most people would, there are those out there who would say you're living the life. I'm just saying.
Oh, on Saturdays and Sundays, I know. <They're> like,
there you go. I love it, dude.
That's what I'm doing.
Hey, man.
From 12 o'clock till whenever the last college football game is, which is usually about 1:30 in the morning, I'm usually watching.
He even watches it out west. Do you have anything else, Chris?
Yeah. No. You brought up some of the other players from the Vikings and everything. Week one, QB starter, would it be Castle or would it be Bridgewater?
What was that again? Could you repeat that?
I said week one starter, quarterback for the Vikings. Is it going to be Castle or is it going to be Bridgewater?
They're saying it's going to be Castle. I'll go with Castle, but, you know, again, the players, they're very happy with Bridgewater. He, like you said, he's done a good job in camp from everything they're saying. Yeah, I guess it's always going to depend on how they play in the preseason. I probably would go with Castle just initially because I'm not saying they're going to win the division. Like, I don't, you know, that's a tough division, to be honest with you, when you have all the Green Bay, who, you know, favorite probably in that division and been so for the past few years. The Bears are really a team on the come up in that dynamic offense. You know, Detroit has another great offense. So it's going to be very difficult to make the playoffs in that division. However, I think they could give teams in that division trouble. And I think they can win possibly 6 or 7 games. Why not? You know, I'm not so Detroit. I'm not sure they address their defensive issues. I mean, they can put up a lot of points, but drafting Eric Ebron, you know, was that really the right decision when you have so many needs on the secondary? I don't know. You know, so, and then the Bears, you know, they've improved defensively, but hasn't been enough. Is it enough to overtake the Packers in that division? The Packers still have questions defensively, so I think they're going to win some games in that division. So I think they're going to start out with Castle just because I think they feel like he probably gives them the best opportunity to win now. So if I had to make that pick, that's probably who I would go with.
Yeah, okay. Well, for me, I mean, I might have to disagree with you. I think that Castle is water under the bridge, so then Bridgewater will start. Shut up.
No, I'm not saying who I think. That's not saying who I think should start. I'm just saying who I think is going to start.
You think? Okay, so you think they're going to play it safe
too? Because I think you already know what you have in that castle.
Yeah, which apparently is a crumbling building rather than a castle. See, I could keep these jokes coming.
Yeah,
keep setting me up, Twan Staley. I got you. Well, man, we're about up to the first half of the show. It was awesome having you. Enjoy yourself at Dolphins camp, my man. You're one of two people who are going to camps with the National Gridiron Network this year. You, the AFC East writer, representing in at Dolphins camp. That's in Davie, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Davie.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Nova Southeastern Hospital and Hospital Center in Davie.
See, I know where the training camp is, but my dumb ass forgets who Cameron Wake is. What is wrong with me? And we also have Brandon Howard going to Browns camp. as well. But Twan Staley, man, tell all the people where they can find you. Let them know your awesome Twitter handle and just where they can see what it is you're going to turn out for Dolphins camp while you're there.
Well, you can find my work at the National Gridiron Network website. Also find my work at Pro Player Insiders. Also find my work at blackredsockfan.com. And my Twitter handle is blackredsockfan. And if you happen, you know, I know it may be some baseball fans, maybe not another strictly a football show, but you can find my work, my baseball work at YachtyWayReport.com as well. Oh. And also, if you're in the Boston area, which we may have some New England fans there in the Boston area, if you like the Red Sox, also in the Rocky Way Report magazine every month as well. So just thought I'd plug that as well.
If you were any other man, I would make fun of you for doing so. But since you're the great and awesome Twan Staley, I'll let it slide. It just shows you're a renaissance man. Thanks a lot for coming aboard, Twan Staley. Have fun at camp, bro.
All right, y'all take it easy. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Twan. So, yeah, actually, he just had a birthday, too, this past weekend. That's why he was out of town. He's all saying, yeah, I was like, well, no, you didn't skip. You, it was your birthday. It's cool, man. You weren't slacking. You were enjoying yourself. I mean, of course, my birthday's during the preseason, so that's fine. I can get away with that. And then, you know, well, and then in your case, Chris, well, you're during the season. So, I mean, you know, you can negotiate with that. Heck, you're actually, come to think of it, you kind of twist that into a tailgate usually, don't you?
Usually, yeah. It's a lot of times with UCF games, it's usually on like during that week.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's the way I look at it. And not to mention at the end of the day, the way you have the chocolate chip cookies at every tailgate before a UCF game, it's like you're celebrating at a birthday party anyway. So screw it, right? It's all good.
So especially now that we invented that brownie cookie sandwich.
Oh, right?
Yeah, the brownie bites and two chocolate chip cookies. Oh. Best thing.
So I'm going to go ahead and take a break so I don't drool into my microphone. You're listening to the National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game, week by week, to the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com and read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGN, football talk, just the way you like it.
And we are back here on the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, here with my co-host, Chris Rankin, bringing you football talk. Just the way you like it. And, you know, we went over a lot of awesome stuff there with Twan Staley at Black Red Sox Fan. Look, okay, I'm sorry. I'm a guy who finds that hilarious. I can't get enough of that. I don't know if I ever told you about this, Chris, but there was one time I was talking to him on when I do my weekly segment during the season on Earnestly Speaking with EJ Christian, actually member of the Op Nation, which merged with us, so he's now on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network every Friday, 4 to 6, by the way. Good time all the way around. But I was doing my regular football segment, and it was with Twan Staley, though, who was doing the guest hosting because EJ was out of town or whatever. So I asked him, I says to him, because his Twitter handle, Black Red Sox Fan, I says to him, hey, Twan Staley, if I cheered for the Chicago hockey team, would that make me a white Black Sox fan? Or Black Hawks fan, rather? He didn't really have an answer for that. So there you go. So anybody who happens to be Caucasian and cheer for the Chicago Blackhawks, there's a good Twitter handle idea for you. Of course, now we'll be up to like number in the thousands or something.
What if you're for the baseball team there and you're the White Sox fan?
That's rough. Hopefully you won't be considered a supremacist at that point. That would be unfortunate for you. Anyways, speaking of supremacy, the Seattle Seahawks, of course, are the defending Super Bowl champions from last year. And I've been having to listen to people on this network, so I won't say anything mean. But let's just say I vehemently disagree with people who try to tell me that Russell Wilson's a top 10 quarterback in this league. Actually, Chris, let me ask you. Is Russell Wilson a top 10 quarterback in this league? Pop quiz.
No, he's not. We mentioned this last week on the show when we brought up the 2012 quarterbacks.
Indeed, we did.
And yeah, he's not a top 10 quarterback.
And, well, the reason why this is all relevant is the reason I think, or a larger reason of the Seahawks' success on offense, in my opinion, is due to one Marshawn Lynch. Why is that relevant? Well, Marshawn Lynch is currently holding out of Seattle Seahawks camp. Now, I know there's some concerns surrounding his age, as there is with any running back who's around that 30-year-old mark. So, Marshawn Lynch holding out. Should the Seahawks acquiesce or should they resist?
They really need him. What, he's been a workhorse the last couple of years there in Seattle. He gives the stability back there in the backfield. Gets the pressure off Russell Wilson. Why some people think he's a top 10 quarterback? It's because you got Marshawn Lynch running the ball.
Yes.
You know. They need to come up with an agreement on him and try to get him in the camp. You know, he might just sit out because he is getting that 30-year-old age. He just wants to sit out of camp, give his body that extra couple weeks of rest, that wear and tear that he's going to be getting this year. But if I was a Seahawks, he's holding out and you can't get an agreement, and I'd be scared.
Right. I mean, because I don't know if they are delusional like some of these other Russell Wilson supporters that are out there trying to say he is a top 10 quarterback. But I'm wondering whether or not they, too, are aware how important Marshawn Lynch is to the fold. And there was another running back lately, and it's funny, I don't hear this example, but there's another running back who's getting up there in age a bit that's still making a decent amount of money. And, of course, I think of none other than divisional rival Frank the Tank Gore being an inconvenient truth to this method, as he's still very productive for the 49ers. Even enough so that he's got some decent fantasy stock. Even still, for the past 3 years, I've been down on Frank Gore because I've looked at him as a committee system running back, and yet he still gets good fantasy numbers. Granted, not elite, obviously. I don't really know of a running back that gets quote-unquote elite fantasy numbers other than Adrian Peterson and maybe Arian Foster, a couple workhorse backs that are rare this day and age. Like, by the way, what happened to Ray Rice last year? I'm just saying. So there's an example out there that could compare to Marshawn Lynch, but it's not the norm. Not to mention Ryan Terrain. Really? He ain't bad. He ain't beast mode. I mean, am I wrong there? I don't know.
No, I mean you're right there. That's the problem with Seattle. What they've been doing is with their backfield, they've been kind of riding Marshawn Lynch the last few years instead of trying to draft a running back. They've been going defense in like all their drafts. It's about to go, like, different spin with the Colts when Peyton Manning got hurt, because they went ever riding on Peyton Manning. Okay, he's fine. Well, no one thought, what if Peyton Manning gets hurt? You know, and so they didn't have a quarterback like what happened that year. So I mean, it could be the same
14?
Right. It could be the same spin with Marshawn Lynch with the Seahawks. You know, I don't care how good your defense is. If you make an offense one-dimensional, which they would be with Russell Wilson, you're going to make Russell Wilson force to get the ball down the field. It's not going to look good for them. And then with the Frank Gore thing right now, there's talks about how, you know, they drafted Carlos Hyde, the rookie from Ohio State, that he's going to get a bunch of touches early on in the season just so they can make sure Frank Gore is healthy when – you know,
when crunch time comes in. Well, and I mean, and let's put that in perspective too. LaMichael James is said to be out for the year. Kendall Hunter tore his ACL, you said?
And Kendall Hunter tore his ACL second day of practice. And then LaMichael James dislocated his elbow
right
over the weekend.
So that's two running backs there down. So, of course, they're going to go to Carlos Hyde. But getting back to Marshawn Lynch, I like the direction you're going. Will it be as dramatic as Peyton Manning? I don't think so, but let's put it this way, and something I heard today actually I was listening to the Asylum Football podcast, and they said something on there that didn't really dawn on me until I heard them say it. I'll give them the credit. Marshawn Lynch is just enigmatic, eccentric, I don't know, crazy enough to actually, you know, just straight up retire. if he's unhappy with this. I mean, we remember the performance he put on at the Super Bowl media days. You know, he's just all about that action, boss. Okay, well, apparently he's all about that money, too, but that's a different topic. You know, now I'll grant, what I'm looking at here with Marshawn Lynch is this year, his cap hit is $7 million. Next year, it's $9 million. So another aspect of this agreement, too, that a lot of people haven't really talked about is if he doesn't restructure now, next year, he's out like a fat kid in dodgeball, okay? Because that's when, you know, that's a... That year is, I think it's when he turns, yeah, that's the year he turns 30. He's 28 now. Excuse me. He turns 30 during that year, which means he will be, you know, quote unquote, running back old, and he'll have a $9 million cap number, okay? That's a cap number that rivals Jordy Nelson with the extension he got with the Packers, which we didn't really get a chance to talk about yet, but we'll get to it, maybe we won't. That's the freedom we have. It's our show. But there's an element of prudence, not just greed here. If he wants to continue to have a job, even at a smaller salary beyond 2015, he needs to get this deal looked at and adjusted. Because at the end of the day, who wants to get a real job? I'm just saying. I don't know. Is that why you went into going to school for being a firefighter, Chris?
Yeah, I don't want the real job.
Anyways, enough of that silliness. You know, I'll go ahead and jump to this topic now. It's one we were going to talk about last week. We ran out of time. But it seems pretty apparent, to me at least. Like, let's just look at the 2013 postseason. Well, 2014 technically with what it has. But the 2013 season's playoff representatives, right? Okay, for the NFC versus the AFC. Okay, the NFC... quite a bit top heavy. True, you did have one team that was 8-7-1 in the playoffs. But the picture was pretty clear what was going to happen in the NFC. And actually, as a matter of fact, the only thing that was kind of unclear is which 10-win team would be left out in the form of course, this year, the Arizona Cardinals. However, for the AFC, it was a lot different. There was, what was it, six teams eligible for that sixth spot going for 8-8. Now, that in itself, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, Chris, but that in itself, to me, shows a disparity in talent. You got all these teams rumbling for 8-8 on one side, but on the other side, you got a 10-win team being forced out. Okay, first of all, it's the greatest travesty in sports. I've only seen it one other time since we've been the student of the game here covering games. And that was back when the Matt Castle Patriots with 11 wins was left out, and 2007 when the Derek Anderson-led Browns were left out with 10 wins. Wow, I actually nailed all that. That's kind of sad. I'm not even looking at any. I don't even have any notes. Chris, see, look at my hands. They're empty. Right? This is retarded. Why?
I can't see your screen, though.
It's porn. No. But wait. It helps me think about how to score. No. But, you know, it's bad. And it's a horrible crime, in my opinion, when you have an 8-7-1 team make the playoffs when a 10-win team has to be at home. But then you got all these 8-8 teams fighting for that last playoff berth. It tells me there's a disparity between the conferences. Now, Chris, noting that the NFC is that superior in the AFC than the AFC in my mind, first of all, do you agree with this premise?
Yeah, I agree with it. Even if you go with the 8-8, 7-9s or whatever, there was 12 teams in the NFC that had 7-9 records or better last year. 12 out of the 16 were 7-9 or better.
Oh, had better than seven wins or more.
Right.
I got you.
You know, AFC, there's 11. I mean, well, most of them are 8-8 or whatever, but a lot of it with the teams, it comes down to defense, really, I think. And that's the difference between the NFC and AFC is defense. The NFC is known for their hard-hitting defense. You know, the Seahawks, the Niners. Panthers had one of the best defenses last year.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, they're not appreciated too. You name those two. What about the entire NFC freaking West? Okay,
right. Yeah, I was getting down there. I was just looking at the list over there with the teams. Yeah, I mean, you got the Cardinals, which you mentioned before, were 10-6. They were forced out. The Rams' defensive front seven is really good. They're, you know, it's they had no offense, which is why they were 7-9.
Because Bradford got hurt, and they got Kellen Clemens at the quarterback spot, and they still almost beat the Seahawks.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you look at those, and then you go to the AFC, they're like, oh, well, what about the AFC North where their power, you know? Baltimore is not what they used to be when Ray Lewis was there.
No.
They're like a cupcake now. Pittsburgh is – they're getting old. They don't have that – you know, they got that firepower from before, but they're just weaker and slower because of the age.
Well, and moreover, let's talk about the youth that they sent away too, right? Okay, Mike Wallace is gone. Emmanuel Sanders now is gone. I mean, they have Antonio Brown. Okay, I'm ecstatic. You know, their receiver core actually is depending mostly on rookies, it looks like. Yeah, they have Heath Miller and Le'Veon. When you want to run a touchdown, Le'Veon Bell. The fragrance by the Steelers. No, but I like that. I like that they have Big Ben. Big Ben is probably among the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the league. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that defense that they rely on is aged out. Bottom line.
All right. And then with those young players that are leaving, it's been the Steelers' philosophy for as long as I can remember is, you know, they do the research and find the players. And they get them in there. And then once the people, you know, make names for themselves or whatever, they move on. They're like, okay, go ahead. You know, we'll get someone else right behind you. They come up. And that's what they've been lacking the last 5 years. They haven't had that other player come in.
Right.
And they started paying some of these players when they're usually leaving to go somewhere else.
Whereas, you know, James Harrison came in for, I don't know who's a good example, say a Larry Foote or something like that at the linebacker spot. Actually, linebackers, where they were really notorious for doing that too, is one would leave and one would come back, you know. I remember it's funny. We talk about James Harrison in his youth. I still remember a play where he caught an interception and then jumped over LaDainian Tomlinson as a Charger on the return. But enough about that. I don't know. I thought that was more memorable than that 100-yard touchdown that he got with the Cardinals, but obviously in the Super Bowl. But obviously that had a lot more impact.
Right. I mean, then you look at all the bunch of the AFC. They're more of like a finesse style team. They're offensive minded. Like, we're going to pass the ball. I mean, like the Broncos, the Bengals, the Patriots, the Colts. They're not known for their defense.
I need you to pull the Bengals off that list because of Geno Atkins, Leon Hall, Vontaze Burfict.
Right,
they
they do have a good defense.
But they're the exception.
Right. Them, you know. But they're still more of a pass happy team.
Oh, absolutely.
With VR. They're more of a finesse. We're just going to throw the ball.
Yeah.
They
haven't been a great running team since Rudy Johnson.
Right. But they're, you know, going into last year, you didn't think their defense was going to be that good. No one thought their defense was going
to
be that good.
I did. I picked them to win a Super Bowl. Okay. You mean people, not me.
Right.
Sorry, my bad.
You know? So
that, and I just didn't want to admit I had them for the Super Bowl.
But I mean, when you get teams like the Titans, the Bills, the Raiders, the Jags, the Texans last year, the Texans used to have a great defense too. And then all of a sudden,
they still do. That's the only reason why they lost by only 1 point to the Chiefs.
Right.
But yeah, that offense.
And to be honest with you, Cleveland's defense looks scary.
Cleveland's defense has been scary for the past couple of years as well. I mean, but you know, hey, I'm going to say this so I can get an application sent to me to be a pro GM somewhere. They need a quarterback. Boom. Assessment win, right? I mean, come on. I'm not winning any awards with that. But let's be honest. I mean, look over the list of quarterbacks, and when you see that the best performing guy on it was probably Derek Anderson in 2007, now we got problems. I'm just Brandon Whedon, Brady Quinn, Colt McCoy. I could keep going, but why depress people?
Right.
But, I mean, and the sad truth is
Tim Couch.
Well, that's going way back. But, you know, I mean, just to show that they were off on the wrong foot from the start. I mean, at one point on their depth chart, they thought Jake Delhomme was a good idea at, like, age 107 in football years, you know. Jake Delhomme.
I mean, there's other NFC teams that
Jason
I.
Jason Campbell was on this one. Seneca Wallace. Right. Come on.
Yeah, there's other teams that are in the NFC that have been known for their defense that I didn't even mention. Also, it was like Chicago.
Oh yeah, and it's even on the decline, and it's still pretty good.
Right, the Giants' defense before the last probably like 5 years, they've gotten a little more to the finesse type.
I wouldn't say 5 years; that's a little harsh. But yeah, the past couple at least.
Well, they don't put the threat in, you know, the people that are like, oh, I have to go against, you know.
Oh my gosh, I have to go against Strahan. Well, that's not an issue anymore. Umanyura, nope, he's in Atlanta. Jason Pierre-Paul, maybe? You know, that defensive line was what it used to be. But, you know, I like that you went to the defense thing. What is it that they say? Offense, you know, sells tickets. Defense wins championships, right? And when you're one botched referee call away from knocking the Saints out of the playoffs and putting the Cardinals in with Carson Palmer as your quarterback, look, I get it that Larry Fitzgerald is a fantastic receiver. I get it that Michael Floyd is a good number two. Name me a running back on the Cardinals squad.
Andre Ellington.
Very good. Okay, I would have said LaRod Stevens Howling. I would have been wrong, too, because he eventually went to the Eagles. But
right. Yeah, no, it was the Mendenhall also.
Rashard Mendenhall. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's right, because he was going to go there with Wisenhunt, but Wisenhunt's
well, the reason why I know is Andre Ellington, because he went to Clemson, and he was a rookie last year. So
hey,
and I picked him up fantasy, because he had a couple good decent runs, because that guy can run.
You answered the question. That's all was asked of you. You don't need to give me the details. Just come off as awesome. That's all you need to do. And I know people out there are going to be like, but Cal, what about the Bears and the Packers? They had an 8-8 and 8-7-1 record. Yeah, and their quarterbacks both missed at least three games. In the Bears' case, five. And their backups were enough to do the job. Why? Dead defense. Now, I'm not going to say dead defense for the Packers, but look, with that offense that they have, and granted it's more finesse style, but it has a lot of weapons, they decided to grow a running game in Eddie Lacy. You know, I think we could put Weasel out there and he would throw, you know, maybe three interceptions. I'm okay, maybe that's reaching. But you see where I'm going? You know, it's a situation where I think you kind of look at the weakest links in the chain of both conferences, and like, just offhand, who would you think is the worst team in the NFC? I mean, when I walk myself through it, that's not an easy answer. I would probably say the Redskins, only on the strength of injury issues, not really necessarily that they're a bad football team, right? I mean, I'm not going to put the Bucks necessarily. I mean, they tried to make an effort.
That's the other team that had, you know, that they started getting back to the ways of defense. The Bucks under Schiano.
Yeah.
Was he had that mentality of, you know, we're going to go after people. I mean, with the Bucks, you don't hear that many with the AFC teams.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
So,
not to say they don't exist, but they're few.
Weakest in there. See, that's, as I said, it's tough because anybody can beat anyone in the NFC any given Sunday.
I hate it when people say that, but in this case, I think it's truly accurate.
Right. Anybody can beat anyone.
I'm not counting the Falcons because that was a MASH unit, okay? Everyone.
Right. I know. And that's the same thing with the Skins. I mean, Skins the year before made the playoffs, won the NFC East.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I you can say Dallas, but, you know, that's, you can say, oh, that's your fanhood talking. But, I mean, when you...
Isn't it?
when you go to the AFC, it's always like the same, basically, Buffalo, Oakland, and Jacksonville at the bottom.
Yeah.
They're like, look at that. Week four, that's an easy win. We're playing against the Raiders.
Of course, that's all fun and games until they get that upset in week one of a Survivor League. I had that happen in my league, and like half the league got killed their first game. For those who don't know, a Survivor League is just like a pick'em league where you get like two strikes and you have to try to go through all the weeks without getting a game wrong, which I was actually in a three-way tie for the win in my Survivor League last year, because when the three leaders all got knocked out, it wasn't like a tiebreak. It said, okay, that's the end of it. You're screwed. Too bad. Deal with it. That's lame, Yahoo. Fix that. Anyway. This is why it's good to have your own personal platform.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. It was, I think it was the Cincinnati game. Whoever Cincinnati lost to last year is what knocked almost everybody out.
It was the Bills or the Dolphins. Might have been the Dolphins, actually. No, it wasn't. The Dolphins won that. Yeah, the Dolphins won that game. I have it right. I just talked about it with Twan Staley. Cameron Wake, come on, man. No, but yeah, which I'm some of the most horrid block. How on earth Do you, as a guard, let the defensive end come that far inside on you? How do you do that? Come on, man. Come on, man.
No, I don't think it was the Dolphins game.
They didn't lose to the Bills. They just went to overtime, I thought.
Yeah, no.
Thaddeus Lewis. I know, your favorite name. They didn't lose to the Browns, did they? So you're even looking it up. I'm just guessing.
No. There's one game I thought. Maybe it wasn't the Bengals then.
The point is...
Point is, it was one game. It was one game that they got... Someone got blown out in. Because it wasn't even close. But I don't remember what it was. I just remember. I know it wasn't a Dolphin game. Because that Dolphins game was in week 9 last year, so.
Yeah, it was Thursday night. I know that.
All right. So I know it wasn't that one because it was like a week 1 or week 2.
So I don't even know. But it's funny. Like the worst teams are all AFC. Like you cited, you know, the usual suspects, Jacksonville, Oakland. And there's one that'll change around every now and again there, too. But you're saying Buffalo, they're actually kind of improving. But, you know, anyways, so enough of that craziness. We got about just under 4 minutes left in the show. So something else I'll jump to here is Roddy White just got an extension with the Falcons. His upcoming salary is for 4 years, $30 million, with a $6 million signing bonus. So 18.6 mil of this is guaranteed. First of all, let me ask you: does that make sense to you, Chris?
You know, he's coming off of some injuries that he had last year.
Well, they all are.
Right. Yeah. Who else hasn't from the Falcons? But you know. It's good to secure him. I mean, the tandem, him and Julio Jones there in Atlanta. I mean, he's Roddy White there for the last few years. If you're fantasy, you know, you were like, oh, thank God I had Roddy White on my team.
Until he got hurt.
Yeah, right. Last year. I'm talking about the 5 years before that, you know.
Yeah, sure. Oh, no, sure. I mean, any time that he wasn't hurt or with Michael Vick, his numbers were good. For some reason, his numbers weren't very big with Michael Vick. I couldn't tell you why.
Right. So, I mean, it is good to secure with the Falcons to secure a receiver to make sure that they have someone there.
See, me, I'm of a bit different ilk. He's 32. He turns 30. Actually, he's 32 right now. He's in the league 9 years. And granted, why has a little less wear and tear than a lot of receivers might. I'm thinking you should have locked up Julio Jones first, actually. That's where I live. Just because he's going to be the future. Hell, I would even say now, at this point, Julio Jones is the better weapon. No offense to Roddy White. He's still talented.
Julio Jones is the better weapon. So. But, I mean, you just need that number two with him. Julio Jones still has, I think, another year or two on his contract.
Yeah.
So they're going to wait till after this season and then lock him in for long term.
Of course, Julio Jones is quoted as saying that he will not be a free agent in 2015. He's looking to try to get a deal in now. And of course, now that the Roddy White deal is done, I think that the Falcons will be free to concentrate on that. I don't know if they're trying to find a way to
90 seconds
to ease Tony Gonzalez out of the rotation or what, but that is where they're at there. So we're winding down to the last 90 seconds of the show. Thank you, of course, to Twan Staley for checking in. You can find him on Twitter at Black Red Sox Fan. Just spell it all like that one word. If you don't know, you better ask somebody. Of course, check out ngscsports.com. That's the website where you can see all our writings, including what Mr. Staley will have from Dolphins Camp as he comes in for the National Gridiron Network. And of course, you'll have me, Kyle Nash, the student of the game. Find me on Twitter at the SOTG. And of course, find my good friend Chris at Rankin, the SOTG. Yes? Did I get it right?
Rankin, SOTG.
Boom! Yes. Money. I feel good about myself. anyways, we will be back next week with Weasel in tow, where we will begin the previews. It feels so odd to begin the previews already, but it's time. That's what we got to do to lead up to that infamous September 1st date. And, of course, we will have Teron Davenport on the show, telling about his experience covering the Hall of Fame in Canton over the weekend, where the induction ceremony will be taking place. Lots of cool stuff from him as well. Really busy show next week. We'll have to step our game up. We have no problem doing
that
for you, our audience, because, hey, we do football talk just the way you like it. But until next time, class dismissed.